पते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नागवतम कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 31 टेक्स्ट 1 मैत्रेय उवाच तत उत्पन्न विज्ञाना आशदोक्षज भाषितम् स्मरन्तात्मजे भार्याम् विसृज्य प्रावृजन् गृहात् मैत्रेय उवाच ततः उत्पन्न विज्ञानम् आश्वधोक्षज भाषितम् स्मरन्त आत्मजे भार्याम् विसृज्य प्राव्रजम् गृहात् मै ट्रांसलेशन एंड परपोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद The great saint Maitreya continued, After that, the Prachetas lived at home for thousands of years and developed perfect knowledge and spiritual consciousness. At last, they remembered the blessings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and left home, putting their wife in charge of a perfect son. Purport. After the Prachetas had finished their penances, they were blessed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord blessed them by telling them that after finishing their family life, they would return home back to Godhead in due course of time. After finishing their family life, which lasted thousands of years, according to the calculations of the demigods, the Prachetas decided to leave home, putting their wife in charge of a son named Daksha. This is the process of Vedic civilization. In the beginning of life as a brahmachari, one has to undergo severe penances and austerities in order to be educated in spiritual values. The brahmachari is never allowed to mingle with women and is thus kept from learning about sex enjoyment. The basic flaw in modern civilization is that boys and girls are given freedom during school and college to enjoy sex life. Most of the children are Varna Sankara, meaning born of undesirable fathers and mothers. Consequently, the whole world is in chaos. Actually, human civilization should be learned based on Vedic principles. This means that in the beginning of life, boys and girls should undergo penances and austerities. When they are grown, they should get married, live for some time at home and beget children. When the children are grown up, the man should leave home and search for Krishna consciousness. In this way, one can make one's life perfect by going home to the kingdom of God. Unless one practices penances and austerities in his student life, he cannot understand the existence of God. Without realizing Krishna, one cannot make his life perfect. The conclusion is when children are grown, the wife should be put in the children's charge. The husband may then leave home to develop Krishna consciousness. Everything depends on the development of mature knowledge. King Prachini Barhishat, the father of the Prachetas, left home before the arrival of his sons, who were engaged in austerity within the water. As soon as the time is ripe, or as soon as one has developed perfect Krishna consciousness, one should leave home, even though all his duties may not be fulfilled. Prachina Barhishat was waiting for the arrival of his sons, but following the instructions of Narada, as soon as his intelligence was properly developed, he simply left instructions for his ministers to impart to his sons. Thus, without waiting for their arrival, he left home. Giving up a comfortable home life is absolutely necessary for human beings, and is advised by Prahlad Maharaj, Hitvatma Patam Grahamandha Kupam. To finish the materialistic way of life, one should leave his so-called comfortable home life, which is simply a means for killing the soul, atmapatam. The home is considered to be a dark well covered by grass, and if one falls within this well, he simply dies without anyone's caring. One should therefore not be too much attached to family life, for it will spoil one's development of Krishna consciousness. So in this beautiful verse and purport, Srila Prabhupada is describing the importance of leading a perfect Krishna conscious life and how such a life culminates in all of one's energies being focused on Krishna and attempts to cut off all different relationships. And of course, today is the appearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and we'll be hearing some of these wonderful glories of one of our acharyas who has shown by his life's example how one can lead a perfect Krishna conscious life while performing all of one's duties. So one point Srila Prabhupada is making is a quotation by Srila Prahlad Maharaj in the end. Hitvatma patam grihamanda kupam. So according to Prahlad Maharaj, one has to be very careful about household life because it is filled with various dangers. Yesterday was also the appearance day of Vamanadev. And in the pastime of Vamanadev, after his appearance and initial ceremonies, Vamanadev walks towards Bhrigukacha, the place where the sacrificial ceremony is taking place. And Bali Maharaj, along with all the Brahmins of the Bhrigu dynasty, are conducting this sacrificial ceremony. And all of them are astounded to see the effulgence of Lord Vamanadev, and Bali Maharaj offers various kinds of gifts for the pleasure of Vamanadev. So at that time, Vamanadev, while replying, he glorifies Bali Maharaj and says that your life is perfect because to have perfection in one's life, one needs two things. One needs good advisors. One needs good association. And good advisors regarding two very important aspects of life. One's life is considered perfect when you have good advisors on how to lead your material life before death and how to plan your spiritual destination after death. If you have perfect idea about these two things, then your life is perfect in this life and in the next. And because Bali Maharaj had both of these advisors, for his regular practical duties, he had the advice of the Brahmanas of the Bhrigu dynasty, who knew the Shastras very well, and who knew what should be the duties of a king to be performed according to Shastric injunctions. And secondly, he had perfect advisor for planning his future life, for his spiritual life. And that advisor was Kulavriddha Pitamah Prashanta. That is Prahlad Maharaj. So Vamanadev is pointing to both of these advisors who are there in front of Bali Maharaj and glorifying Bali Maharaj and saying that your life is perfect because here are your advisors for your material life, the Brahmanas of Bhrigu dynasty, and here is your advisor for your spiritual life, for your future destination, that is Prahlad Maharaj, one of the great Mahajans. So from all points of view, your life is perfect. Now the question is raised by Srila Prabhupada in the purport that here is Prahlad Maharaj, and Prahlad Maharaj in his childhood has spoken so many heavy verses about household life. And he has also spoken about how one must give up household life. And hitvātma pātam grahamanda kūpam vanam gato. He was preaching to his father that give up this life and go to the forest. And now in his grand old age, he is still in his home. And he is enjoying life with his grandsons in the opulence of the palace. So there seems to be a difference in the way he preached and the way he is acting. There seems to be a discrepancy. So is he not walking his talk? Is there some discrepancy? Is this a fault on his part? So how can you explain Prahlad Maharaj's behavior? If he is very old, he is described as Kulavriddha and Pitamaha. He has already become a grandfather. He has grandsons and is very, very old. That means his son Virochan was the king and he has retired from being the king and given the post of the king to Bali Maharaj. So the age of Prahlad Maharaj is such that his grandson has become the king and he is still enjoying life in the same palace with family and grandson and everything. So Prabhupada writes that Vamandev is therefore addressing Pitamaha, Kulavriddha and Prashanta. So the word Prashanta which is used is very significant. So there is no fault on the part of Prahlad Maharaj because he is Prashanta. Prashanta means he is sober. Sober means a person is not in an intoxicated state. He has understood and realized his insignificance. He has realized he is simply a part and parcel of Krishna. And therefore, Prahlad Maharaj is not affected by anything external. He is not affected by any kind of opulence, any kind of family affection. And therefore, he is described as Prashanta. All kinds of attractions and changes in family situation cannot change his faith. And therefore, Prabhupada also quotes that Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigyana Bhujhai. Many times Vaishnava's activities cannot be understood and appreciated by those with mundane vision. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj staying at home, even at that age, cannot be subject to criticism because he is not an ordinary person. He is in fact one of the greatest Vaishnavas who is unaffected by any kind of changes or any kind of discrepancy in family life. So it is not that he was affectionate, he was attached and so he was staying. But he was there, and although he was there, he was on a high platform, and at any cost, that act of Prahlad Maharaj cannot be subjected to criticism. So therefore, this one interesting point with relation to Vamandev and Prahlad Maharaj, I thought I will just begin the class. And we have in our own Sampradaya Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, whose appearance day we are celebrating today, who has displayed by his life's example the most wonderful essence of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy and Siddhanta. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was his glorious son, he has given us warnings as to not judge the life of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur based on certain external situations which we may find. Just like we should not judge the life of Prahlad Maharaj because he is a great soul and he is prashanta, he is sober, he is one of the eternal associates of the Lord. Similarly, as far as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is concerned, it is described that externally he may have appeared to be one of the seekers of truth, dabbling in Western philosophical thought, embracing the British culture, writing various kinds of mundane books, and gradually coming in contact with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. And by his actions, it may appear that he is just like a sadhaka who is just seeking the truth. And then he has found the truth at a certain point of time in life. But one should not judge the life and the characteristics of great souls. And Saraswati Thakur gives four examples that just like we should not judge the life of Ramananda Rai, because whatever actions he performed were above mundane inspection. One should not judge the life of Arjun, that how he became bewildered in spite of being an eternal associate of the Lord. It is not subject to mundane scrutiny. Or one should not judge Mukunda, how Mukunda was completely on the transcendental platform, but externally he appeared to be just a physician. Externally he was a physician, but internally he was experiencing the highest, deepest ecstasies in relationship with the Lord. And how Pundarik Vidyanadhi was also sometimes mistaken, because his external situation was very, very opulent, but internally he was one of the eternal associates of the Lord. And Gadadhar Pandit directly witnessed this with his own eyes. When certain verses glorifying the Lord's compassionate nature were spoken, the real devotional aspect of Pundarik Vidyanadhi came out. So similarly, when dealing with the lives of great souls, one cannot judge based on limited vision. And with this kind of a warning, we can approach the life of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and try to understand his contribution. Otherwise, one may make an error in judgment and may even commit some offense. So Srila Saraswati Thakur describes that Shishir Kumar Ghosh, who was one of the editors, the owners of Amrit Bazar Patrika, which is the largest circulating daily in the whole world in any language. So he was, at a certain point in time, became a very close friend of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he even involved Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur to edit various magazines which the Amrit Bazar group was publishing. And later, Shishir Kumar Ghosh's grandson ultimately became the chief minister of Bengal during Prabhupada's time. When the Mayapur land transaction was taking place, Tarun Kanti Ghosh was the grandson of Shishir Kumar Ghosh, and he was very close to Srila Prabhupada. So this family was very close to our mission and our sampradaya. And Shishir Kumar Ghosh was never a practicing devotee at any point of his life. He observed the life, the integrity, the kind of dedication of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he wrote to him, and in fact he wrote in an article in Amrit Bazar Patrika, that I have never seen the six Goswamis in my life, but by seeing your activities and by seeing your standards, I feel that you are the seventh Goswami. So Shishir Kumar Ghosh was the person who gave this title, seventh Goswami, to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he was born in September of 1838 to Anand Chandadat and Anand Mohini, Jagat Mohini, in a place called Ula, which is in the Nadia district. And from his very childhood, he was subjected to a very wonderful Vedic culture. And in Ula at that time, the family with which we are staying, they were so opulent that practically 1500 Brahmin families were staying in that village. And they would celebrate all Vaishnava festivals with great pomp. And to explain the kind of opulence they enjoyed, it is described that each member of the family in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house, at that time he was known as Kedarnath Datta, he had his own pet elephant. And all of his brothers were having their own elephants. And that was the kind of opulence they had as children initially. And it is described that the first descriptions of Vaishnava Shastras like Ramayana, Mahabharata, and these things he would hear from the gatekeeper who was there in their house. And he was an ex-dacoit. And he would tell different pastimes of his, of how he killed so many other dacoits. And Kedarnath would spend long hours listening to him. And he would also explain to him the leelas of Lord Ram and the leelas of different characters of Mahabharata. And he developed a taste for hearing about the Lord's pastimes from that time. At the age of 7, he entered into the Krishnanagar College, and the professors who were teaching him at that young age could immediately see his proficiency in the English language. And he was praised for his excellent skills and command over the English language right from that stage. One fact about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life is, from his very childhood, if you just study, as we will see, all through his life he went through a series of tragedies, ups and downs. And this is one of the most inspiring things for us, that when we face difficulties in life, we become morose, we become depressed, we lose hope. But from his very childhood, we can see that Kedarnath Datta, he had an intense life filled with ups and downs. There were various tragedies, various illnesses, sicknesses of the most horrible kind, along with various kinds of problems in government service which he had to face. And in spite of all of that, he could sustain his life perfectly as a great Vaishnava saint. And Srila Prabhupada writes, how was that possible? That was simply possible because of two things. Because of his sincerity and dedication. And in the long run, if one has to maintain his Krishna consciousness, these two things matter the most. Sincerity and dedication. And so Prabhupada writes, by normal standards, no person could have managed these multiple difficult situations. And in spite of that, managed to write more than 150 major Vaishnava books for the first time in the English language and Bengali. So he was not ordinary. Extraordinary determination, extraordinary sincerity and dedication. And no one has managed to make a mark in history without these two qualities of sincerity and dedication. And therefore, his efforts were not just superficial, but he was a very deep person who put his heart and soul in every act which he performed, every responsibility which he took. And that is what made all the difference. So, when he was age 8, he had his brothers, Kali Prasanna, and his brothers Harichandra and Gauridas, they left their bodies. And it was a great shock and tragedy in his own family, and his mother became extremely possessive of him. And very soon, his father, he was also a very wonderful devotee, Anand Chandra Datta, he also died. So within 1 year, he had to see the deaths of so many close family members. At this time, he started asking questions in life, in this manifest pastime. What is the goal of life? What exactly is God? And he was receiving various kinds of answers from various personalities. He studied Christianity. He started receiving answers from Quran. And then there were some Vedantic scholars. But all of these answers appeared very contradictory. And he could not get satisfactory answers, but his search was on. At the age of 12, he got married. and his first wife, her name was Shyamani. And immediately after marriage, he got the first bout of severe sickness. And he had blood dysentery, an itching sensation which would not go at all. Severe skin diseases. And then there was one local doctor who was like a fakir. His name was Fakir Golok. So he treated him with some various methods he had at that time. And while treating him, he made two predictions. And one was that his hometown of Ulagram will be completely devastated by cholera. And secondly, he is going to become a great Vaishnava Acharya in future. So the predictions were there from a very young age. So it was 1856 and he joined the University of Calcutta. And one of his professors in University of Calcutta was Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar. Was a very famous personality in Indian history. Very prominent scholar at that time. And he also became member of the English club, the British Literary Society. And he would regularly be making presentations, participating in debates and writing books. And one of the first books he wrote was a magnum opus 30-volume book on the pastimes or the activities of King Porus in his fight with Alexander the Great. By any standard, this is completely a mundane historical incident. But you can see that the urge to write was there. And he was writing this book. And then he also wrote a 25-volume book on the pastimes of Vikram and Vetal, which all children in India, they grow up with. And he wrote in detail all of these. And he was still writing many more books. But during one of his presentations in the British Literary Society, there was one Britisher. His name was Mr. Dale. And he just asked one question in front of everyone. That you are reading and studying so many books and writing so many books, you are acquiring so much of knowledge. What is the ultimate purpose of all this knowledge which you are acquiring? And that one question, it became such a major landmark in his life that he really started introspecting and thinking, exactly, why am I writing so many books? And why am I studying so many mundane things? What is the ultimate purpose? And then his intensity in searching for what is the reality and truth deepened. This was the year 1857 and the British mutiny, the mutiny of soldiers against the British Raj had started. And at that time he became very close friends with Satyendranath Tagore, Vijayendranath Tagore and Rabindranath Tagore, that family. And their home would become the hub of all activity. And they would have long discussions on what exactly is happening now in that British mutiny and who is going wrong and who is going right. And his opinions would be considered as very valuable. So he was very close to some of the most prominent families at that time in Bengal. And in a similar period, he got his first job because he had married and he needed a job. So after his college days, the first job he got was as a grade 2 school teacher for children of class 2, and at the salary of 15 rupees per month. At that time, that was his first job, and he was 19 years of age. Within a few months, he changed his job, and this is another thing we'll see. How many times he was transferred and shifted during his career, and how many times he became sick, that is something which is amazing and mind-boggling. And we can see that how many times his life had to be changed drastically, but he tolerated all this. Within a few months, he got his second job as an accountant in a sugar mill. And the sugar merchant employed him as an accountant. And then one customer, while making transaction, he gave extra money than what he was supposed to give. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur Kedarnath Datta, he was very truthful. So immediately he called the customer back and said, "You have paid me more money, take it back." So the sugar merchant, he saw this and he became very angry. And he said, "You are not fit to be here. You are a Brahmin, you should rather be a teacher. If you are here, someone has paid extra, you are calling him back and giving him, so you have no future in this trade." So he suggested you become a teacher. So he was taken off from that job also. And this was year 1858. An interesting pastime took place with his grandfather. His maternal grandfather, he was at the place called Choti in Orissa, near Cuttack. And his name was Raja Vallabhadatta. And he visited him because he had called him saying that, "I am going to leave my body." And this Raja Vallabhadatta had certain peculiar eccentricities. He would fast all day, and at night 12 o'clock he would cook kachoris. And he would add some chilies and he would eat that. And then he would keep making various kinds of predictions about various things which are going to take place. And he was known as a very powerful personality, but a great devotee of Lord Jagannath. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur came and saw that he was perfectly fit. And Kedarnath Datta asked him, "Why you have called me? You said you are about to leave your body, but you look perfectly hale and hearty, eating nicely." And he said, "No, in 3 days I am going to depart. And therefore I want you to be here to witness my departure." And in 3 days' time, at a very auspicious moment, on a very auspicious day, Raja Vallabhadatta, in yogic trance, left his body chanting the names of God. And before leaving, he called Bhaktivinoda Thakur near, moments before he departed, and said that, "Till the age of 27, your career will not have any proper background. You will not have any stability in your career. From the age of 27, you will get a proper job. And number two, you will also become a very great Vaishnavacharya." So this was the second personality who was making the prediction about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And then he left his body. And in 1859, again, he went, because he was in Choti, so he went to Cuttack, which was nearby, and he got a job. This was his third job as a teacher for standard 6 children. But now his salary became 21 rupees per month. And he brought his family there. But he could not survive for more than 1 year as a teacher there. In 1860, he went to Bhadrak. He became headmaster. And he was earning 45 rupees per month. And he got his first son at that time. His name was Annada. And at that time, his desire for writing books continued. And because he was in Orissa, he wrote 2 books. One is Temples of Orissa. And the second book was The Mathematics of Orissa. So these 2 books were published by him at that time. And at that time, there was also some kind of a conflict between Ram Mohan Roy, who was founder of Brahmo Samaj, and the local Hindus. So Raja Ram Mohan Roy was actually from a Vaishnav family. His mother was a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But because of Western education, Ram Mohan Roy suddenly got some vague ideas. And then he rejected Lord Chaitanya and started his own society of Brahmo Samaj. And his mother was, he rejected Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but his Vaishnava mother rejected him and sent him away from home. So he was driven out of home. And later, even Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, they opposed the movement of Ram Mohan Roy, Brahmo Samaj. And they used to have a strange prayer, "Nirakar Tumar Charan Dekhi," that, "Oh, unmanifest, impersonal, please manifest your feet." So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur used to say, "What a crazy prayer." That Nirakar, first of all they are saying Nirakar, and they are saying Tumar Charan Dekhi. How is it possible? That shows that their whole society is based on very nonsensical principles. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was called, Kedarnath Datta was called to mediate between a conflict between Hindus and Ram Mohan Roy. The Hindus were about to destroy him. They were so angry. So Kedarnath Datta came and he was already known as a gentleman and he mediated in the conflict between the two. And at this stage, he started his search for the bona fide version of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because what had happened was, there was a publisher in Calcutta called Baratala Publishers, whose proprietor was Beni Madhav Day. And between the years 1915 and 1930, this publishing house, they had published various versions of Chaitanya Charitamrita and included various kinds of Sahajiya understandings in that CC. So apart from the original verses given by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, there were also versions from all of these other apasampradayas in this. And therefore it was very difficult to find one bona fide copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And so we can imagine that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to spend practically 12 years before he could find one bona fide copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And now, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, we have all of that with us at one shot. But still, we are finding it so difficult to open the CC and read it. And when we hear the austerities with Bhaktivinoda Thakur performed, simply to find one copy of CC, this is just amazing. So in 1861, his first wife, she developed some illness and she left the body. And immediately afterwards, after a few months, because he was left with a 7-month-old child, he was completely helpless. So he married again to Bhagavati Devi. And by this time, he got his 7th job as tax collector and a clerk in nearby Cuttack. In 1864, that was a turning point where he received a letter from the government, and especially there was the local British lord at that time, his name was Healy. He had a very good opinion about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Kedarnath Datta, and he held him in high esteem. And at one shot he received 3 offers. That first was to be a clerk in Cuttack, and the second was to be in charge of the stores, and third was as district magistrate. And provided that he passes the exam of the Britishers, at that time it was the civil service, and immediately he went for this district magistrate job, and the age at that time was 27. That was exactly as his grandfather had predicted. So he became the district magistrate of Dinajpur, and this was the first time in 1868 in Dinajpur that he got the association of devotees. And that time, Kamal Lochan and Ramananda Vasu, they were 2 very great devotees, and they were having satsang at Dinajpur regularly. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in their association, started reading and studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhakti Mala, and all of these books. And it is described that in 1 year, he heard and read all of these different books. And within 1 year, he got so inspired, his anuraga, or his great love for the Lord, was ignited to such an extent that in that same year, towards the end, he wrote a book called Sachidananda Premalankar, which was a treatise on the life and teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then this was the beginning of a series of Vaishnav literatures which he was going to present to the world. So 1868 at Dinajpur was a historic period when, after receiving association, he wrote the first book on Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's glories. And in 1869, there was a very famous speech which he gave in one satsang program, and that was Bhagavat, the Srimad Bhagavat, its philosophy, ethics and theology. This was an extempore speech which he gave. And this speech was such a classic that later it became one of the most famous books. This speech was transcribed, and later it was those who took notes from this lecture later published this book, and it became one of the most famous books establishing Gaudiya Vaishnavism as perfectly bona fide and following in footsteps of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at that time. And in this preface to this book, he writes that how the Srimad Bhagavatam is the perfect literature. How the great sage Vedavyas, he has transmitted from the cold snowy regions of Badrikashram the heat of Srimad Bhagavatam. And this heat of Srimad Bhagavatam dissipates the ignorance and darkness in all directions. And then he also takes a punch at Ram Mohan Roy and saying that the train of Ram Mohan Roy branches off like the Rani Ghat section of the railways from the barren station of Shankaracharya and does not meet the great Nadia Express of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and therefore it is completely non-bona fide. And then he explains in great detail what were the faults and flaws in Ram Mohan Roy's philosophy. In 1871, and that time he was also district magistrate in Champaran, and there was a Brahma Daitya. And this Brahma Daitya was very powerful, and this Brahma Daitya, it had been controlled by a few dacoits. So what these dacoits would do was, they would loot the villagers. And then any villager would give witness in court, this Brahma Daitya would attack. So nobody was willing to give witness against these crooks. So the Brahma Daitya was like part of their gang. So then nobody was able to do anything about this. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by his power, he came under this tree where the Brahma Daitya were residing. And he started recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam for several weeks. And by regular recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam, this Brahma Daitya was driven away. In 1871, historic year, he came to Jagannath Puri. He became the district magistrate at Puri. And the first thing he did was visit the Samadhi of Haridas Thakur at Swargadwar. And that is the period, that is the time when he was inspired to write that poem. And one paragraph of that poem is that famous line that one reasons ill who say that Vaishnavas die. So that line was written as part of this series of prayers glorifying Haridas Thakur and his Samadhi. And because he came to Jagannath Puri, his officers in Bengal were so much missing him that there were lot of attempts to get him back to Bengal because he was in so much demand. And this is one characteristic of a great soul, dhira dhira janapriya, that all kinds of people are attracted to them. And therefore the Britishers, they were very much attracted to the efficiency and his gentlemanly behavior and wanted to get him back and make him district magistrate somewhere in Bengal. But when he was in Jagannath Puri, the local in charge in Orissa, Ravenshaw, he called Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Kedarnath Datta, and gave him a very important responsibility. And he said that there is a local god who is creating terrible influence, and his name is Bishak Sen. And this Bishak Sen is enticing the ladies in nearby villages and creating big scandals by having illicit sex with ladies from good families. And so many complaints they were receiving. And the administration was helpless because the local people were in favor of this Bishak Sen. And at that time, Bishak Sen was claiming that he has risen from the ocean of milk. and he is actually the incarnation of Mahavishnu. And he has arrived in Orissa for the purpose of annihilating the demons and protecting the pious. And all the local people believed him and they were worshipping him. So Kedarnath Datta, he took his group of policemen and approached him straight into his camp, into the very place where he was residing, and challenged him. He was about to arrest him. And Bhishik Sen, he would not give up so easily. So he said, "So what is the purpose of your visit?" And Kedarnath Datta said, "I have come to arrest you because you are claiming to be God." And Bhishik Sen said, "I am actually the Supreme Lord. And actually, that Jagannath in Puri is only my expansion. And Lord Chaitanya is only my part and parcel." And when he claimed like this, Bhaktivinoda Thakur became very angry and shouted to him that, "You are not God, you are like Ravan, you are like a demon. And therefore, because you are not surrendering, we have to arrest you by force and put you in prison. And once we take you to Jagannath Puri, let us see how you manifest your power." And as they were about to arrest him, suddenly sparks started flying out of his body. And all these other guards and policemen, they had arrested many criminals before, but never seen such fireworks display. And they got bewildered and none of them could approach him. And some of them started running away. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur personally, he led a group of people and somehow managed to hold him and then tied ropes around his hands, put him in a bullock cart. And then all through, Bhishik Sen was shouting, "Yet you do not know what you are doing. I am the Supreme Lord. By my glance, I can destroy the whole universe. But because the Lord is compassionate on his devotees, he is not doing. But if you continue like this, you are going to pay for it." It was a very scary scene. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was not only a very great compassionate Vaishnav, but he was very powerful in destroying demoniac influences. And not only here, but also in Jagannath, in Vrindavan, he did like that once. When there were local bandits and dacoits called Kanjahars, and they would be attacking all the local devotees and pilgrims, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the person who attacked them, practically destroyed, killed most of them with the help of his soldiers. And the whole Kanjahar community was destroyed. And from that time, Vrindavan became a more peaceful place. So Bhishik Sen was taken to prison and he fasted for 21 days. He had so much of power, he didn't eat for 21 days. And the local people were all protesting against Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It was intense pressure. And not only that, the day the judgment was about to be given, few days before that his son became severely ill. And on the day of judgment, Bhaktivinoda Thakur suddenly had a kind of cardiac arrest. And he could hardly get up. And his wife was pleading with him, "Leave this fellow. Do not get involved with him. We are going to lose our family life because of him." But he said, "No, I am determined. I cannot tolerate any kind of injustice like this. It is my duty to protect the Vaishnava society." And because of his bravery, finally this Bhishik Sen was somehow sentenced to prison. And when he was in prison, one of the prison guards, they took the chance and cut off his hair. And all of his power was in his hair. And as soon as his hair was cut, immediately he lost all his power. And within 24 hours he left his body. And at that time, in another village called Jajpur, a Brahma manifested. So after Mahavishnu, Brahma came. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to deal with Brahma. Then in another village nearby, Balram manifested. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to deal with so many pseudo-incarnations. But because he was very brave and fearless, he could deal with all of them. And this is a very important part of his contribution, that in spite of all opposition, in spite of difficulties, he remained rock steady in the fulfillment of his duties. You could not find any blemish in the way he executed his regular duties as a government officer. Because he was a Vaishnav, because he was a devotee, it was not that he was neglectful of his duties. He performed his duties perfectly. That was his greatness. In 1872, when he was in Jagannath Puri, he had a tutor called Gopinath Pandit. And for the first time, he started scrutinizingly studying Srimad Bhagavatam. He had only heard the Bhagavatam, read it, but now he actually embarked on a scholarly study of the 12 cantos of Bhagavatam. And in 1 year, he finished, along with dealing with all these Bhishaksen and Balram and Brahma, he finished 12 cantos study of Bhagavatam with the commentaries of 3 to 4 acharyas. He finished the 6 sandarbhas, the Shat Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami. He finished the Govinda Lilamrita, Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu and Prameya Ratnavali. All of these books he just didn't glance through, he didn't distribute, but he studied scrutinizingly and he was ready to give commentaries on all of this in 1 year of study. So therefore, we cannot read any of these books which he has written or read, but once a year, just by repeating the books he wrote, I feel very much purified. And we feel that, okay, we are so fallen, we are nowhere in the picture. So 1874, there was a royal conspiracy because he caught the king. He didn't even spare the king of Puri. The king of Puri was found to be embezzling some funds of the Jagannath temple. So some funds of Jagannath temple was with the king and he had not given it back. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent him notice. And the king became very angry. So in his private chambers, the king started performing a yajna, a tantric yajna to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So what all he had to go through? And then on the last day, this was a 27 day yajna. And on the last day, when the last oblation was being poured, rather than anything happening to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the king's son died. That means the whole yajna had an opposite effect because of the power of Saraswati Thakur. And that was also the year when Bimal Prasad was born. That was a historic year. And Bimal Prasad, who later on went, became Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And in 1880, this was also a very important year, and this was the year where he started his very famous magazine Sajjan Toshini and Harmonist. And he wrote the book Kalyana Kalpataru, which was containing 3 aspects. One was Upadesh, Upalabdhi and Uchhavas. Upadesh means advice for people like us who are trying to fight with the anarthas. Upalabdhi means attainment of pure devotional service. And Uchhavas means experience of spiritual emotions. And this Kalyana Kalpataru is considered to be a classic. And he also wrote Krishna Samhita in the same year. And he sent a copy of the Krishna Samhita to Ralph Waldo Emerson in the West. And Emerson wrote back a very nice critical acclaim in which he said that, "I am not able to understand the book completely because it is in a different language, because it was written in Sanskrit and Bengali. But then certain sections I am able to understand, and I think this is a great contribution to the whole society." And this was year 1881, and he came in contact with Bipin Bihari Goswami and then took formal spiritual initiation from him. The same year he visited Vrindavan and he met Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, became very inspired by him and accepted him as his Shiksha Guru. And he was in Braja for 3 months on leave along with his family. But as soon as he entered Braja, he got a severe fever. And when he got this fever, he just prayed to the Lord, "My dear Lord, I have come to Vrindavan to be spiritually inspired. I understand that this fever is because of my past karma. Please, I request you to adjust my karma little bit. That so that during my stay in Vrindavan, I am not sick. You can give the same dose of fever later." And within a couple of days, the fever went. But as soon as that period was over, and he went back to his next posting at Jessore, immediately he got the fever. And he got severe infection on his right eye. And thus, in 1884, it is described that Bankim Chandra, who was the famous Bengali poet who wrote our Vande Mataram, right, and initially that was supposed to be our national anthem, but then Nehru found that this Vande Mataram does not fit into the proper music melody, so he chose this other song, Jana Gana Mana, which was a song written to glorify King George the V, who was coming to India in 1918. So this Jana Gana Mana whole song was written for welcoming King George. But Nehru just took few paragraphs from that and then made it into a national anthem, saying that this is for the country, whereas it's not meant for the country at all. It was for King George. Jana Gana Mana Adhinayak. Adhinayak refers to King George. Jaya Hey, all glories to you, King George. Bharata Bhagya Vidhata. You are supposed to be the Vidhata of the Bhagya of India. So then, this Bankim Chandra was a very famous poet. And he considered Bhaktivinoda Thakur to be so great that after he wrote his book, he sent it to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and said that, "You edit this book and make corrections in this book and send it to me." So for any writer and author, to request like this from someone is a major thing. And the name of this book was Krishna Charita. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur practically corrected the whole book, because the whole book was filled with philosophical flaws. Because in Krishna Charita, which was written poetically, but yet considered Krishna to be an ordinary mythological character. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur changed the whole thing. Practically 90% of his work was changed. So finally Krishna Charita was published in the name of Bankim Chandra, but actually it was Bhaktivinoda. And then when all the historians read that book, they criticized Bankim Chandra, saying that how you are mentioning in this book that Krishna is a historical personality. Till now all your books were very good, but there is some big problem in this book. And that was a proof that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was perfect, that whatever he did was correct. Because generally people consider Krishna to be an ordinary person. And this was the year 1886. And for the first time, the Bhagavad Gita commentaries were written. He took the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and he wrote his own commentary, the Rasika Ranjan commentary. And the introduction to this book was given by Bankim Chandra, because Bankim Chandra felt indebted that he had helped him in this previous book. So he wrote an introduction, and because people knew Bankim Chandra very well, so lot of people bought these Bhagavad Gitas. And in 1886, he founded the Chaitanya Press. And in this, he started publishing books like anything. In that 1 year, there was a literary explosion. He wrote the Bhagavad Gita with commentaries of 3 or 4 acharyas, Chaitanya Shikshamrit. He wrote the commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrit, Amrita Pravaha Bhashya. He wrote also a commentary on the Vishnu Sahasranam by Baldev Vidya Bhushan. Because Baldev Vidya Bhushan takes Vishnu Sahasranam and every name of Vishnu he explains to be how it is glorifying Krishna Lila. So that Bhaktivinoda Thakur translated and presented. Then he also presented the Sammodhani Bhashya and Prema Pradeep. The devotional novel was written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And practically 15-20 books he wrote in that 1 year. And the result of this was so much of intellectual endeavor. At the end of the year, he got severe headaches because so much of intellectual activity. And when he got these severe headaches, he decided to resort to two things. First, he applied ghee on his head. And second, he started praying to Jiva Goswami for his mercy. Because Jiva Goswami was a person who wrote 4 lakh original Sanskrit verses. So he started praying for his mercy, that only when you give mercy, then I can sustain this space of writing all of these Vaishnava Shastras. So it was a very unique treatment he resorted to. And very soon, all of his headaches were gone. And this was year 1887, and there was a society of devotees. They gave him the title Bhakti Vinod. Bhakti Vinod means one whose life is completely dedicated to bhakti. And Vinod means one who always finds pleasure in performing bhakti and glorifying Krishna. Since your life is nothing more than dedication to Krishna and glorification of Krishna, so they gave him this title, Bhakti Vinod. And in 1887, a very historic event took place. He was transferred to a place called Rampur. But he didn't want to go there because he thought, now my years are progressing, I'm becoming old, and I have to do something more. He had a mission to find the birth site of Lord Chaitanya. So he requested the district magistrate who had been transferred to Rampur, who had been transferred to Krishnanagar, to exchange with him. So they exchanged their transfers. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur came to Krishnanagar. But as soon as he came to Krishnanagar, he was struck with malaria. And for 45 days, he was down with malaria. And for 45 days, he only drank milk. And he hardly ate anything. And he took some medicines. And he was hankering to enter Navadvip and start his search. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not making his task very easy. After 45 days, when his fever came down, then for the first time, he crossed the river from Krishnanagar, came to Navadvip and entered. And as soon as he entered, his hairs were standing on end, because he could understand that now one of the main missions of my life, to find the birth site of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is going to be fulfilled. So he and his son, they stayed in what is known as Rani Dharamshala, and they had their room there. And every day he would be studying various maps of that area to find any clues of where Lord Chaitanya's birth site is. The Ganges had shifted, and so many of the reference points were not exactly as according to the map. And also the local people did not know much, and they were calling that place a different place as the birth site, but he didn't have faith in that. And one day, as he and his son were sitting on the terrace of Rani Dharamshala, they saw a big, huge effulgence coming from a distance. And when Bhaktivinoda Thakur visited that spot, he found a dense bush of tulsi trees growing in that area. And that was the first clue that this could be the spot of Lord Chaitanya's appearance. So taking that point as the reference, he checked the maps and found that in the maps, that spot was referred to as Mayapura. And then he went to Chaitanya Bhagavat. And in Chaitanya Bhagavat, he found this reference. Navadvipe madhye Mayapura namasthan yathaya janmile gaura chandra bhagavan. Where it was described by Vrindavan Das Thakur very clearly that Navadvipa Madhye, right in the very center of the mandal of Navadvip, is a place called Mayapur. And that was the place Yathaya Janmile Gaurachandra Bhagavan. So this was the Shastric evidence. First was the empirical evidence from the map. Second was the Shastric evidence he got from Chaitanya Bhagavat. Then he wanted to have a spiritual evidence. So he brought Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj with him, who was very old. And he was being carried by his servant Bihari on a basket. And as soon as he arrived at that spot, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj jumped into the sky. And he shouted, "E to amar Nimai Janmasthan. This is my Nimai's birthplace." So that was spiritual evidence. And then, once the construction began and they were digging for the foundation for the Yogapit Mandir, they found the deity of Adhokshar Vishnu. And this was the archaeological evidence that yes, this was the place where Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi were worshipping the Lord, and the deity of Adhokshar Vishnu was found. So in this way, from all points of view, it was confirmed that this was the actual location of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. And this is one of the major contributions of Bhaktivinoda Thakur to Vaishnava society, that he rediscovered this spot. And so in 1891, he took leave, 2 years leave from his job for preaching. And along with his two dear associates, Ramaseva and Sitanath Mahapatra, he toured all over Bengal and Orissa. And in 2 years' time, he set up 500 Namhattas all over the place. Whatever he did, he would do intensely. 500 Namhattas in just 2 years. And all of their satsangs would have at least 1,000 to 2,000 people. And they would have huge kirtan, and he would speak for some time, and again they would have kirtan, and there would be prasad distribution. And he gave the blueprint for the modern day preaching mission, which was founded by Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur in form of Gaudiya Math, and later Srila Prabhupada as ISKCON, of how organized preaching can take place. What is the structure for preaching? This entire Namahatta of initially preaching, and then sanghas being formed, and then these sanghas multiplying, and then further sanghas being created. So what we call as Bhakti Vriksha model now of congregational preaching development was originally envisaged by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And in 1891, they founded the Navadvip Dham Pracharini Sabha, which was a trust for beginning the temple construction at the spot of Lord Chaitanya's appearance. And the king of Tripura was made the president of this Sabha. And therefore, very soon this temple at Yogapit was to come up. And in 1894, he retired to Surabhi Kunj. He retired officially from his government service, went to Surabhi Kunj, and then he started personally collecting funds for the construction of this temple. He would go house to house, even to houses which would give them hardly a few rupees. He was not concerned with how much money they were giving, but he just considered himself to be a beggar. And he would beg people. Now someone who had been a government servant, who had been a district magistrate, who had so much of power and influence before, now post-retirement, he did not go into some kind of a crisis. He actually took the mood of a humble servant, and holding chadar in front of him, he was begging in people's homes. He would even visit the homes of people who were inimical to him, against him, and he would beg from them, "Please contribute a penny for this Vishnupriya Adhokshaj Mandir, Vishnupriya temple at Gaur Vishnupriya Mandir at this spot at Yogapit." And then by his efforts, in March 1895, on Gaur Purnima day, was a massive installation festival of this Gaur Vishnupriya deities. And the deities were installed, which we see even now at Yogapit. And there was a 7-day festival organized by him on this occasion. And with the mercy of the Supreme Lord, in 1896, for the first time, his works reached the Western world and went to Canada. And Srila Prabhupada was also born in the same year. And Srila Prabhupada was asked later by one of his disciples, Achyutananda Swami, that why Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur did not go to the West, only sent his books to the West. And Srila Prabhupada said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so powerful that he could have done the preaching himself. But then what we would have done? We would have had no service. Therefore, he was merciful. And therefore, he left behind some service for me and for all of you. Otherwise, he is so powerful, he could have done all of it himself. So, Srila Prabhupada gave full credit to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And in 1901, a very interesting incident took place. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote a book called Srimad Bhagavat Archa, Arka Marichi Mala. So generally Bhagavatam is 12 cantos, but it is not systematically described topic-wise. And what Bhaktivinoda Thakur did was, he took this entire Srimad Bhagavatam and presented it from the point of view of Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojan, and he explained the different concepts according to topics. So that is Srimad Bhagavat Arka Marichi Mala. And it is considered to be a classic literature because the very complex book Bhagavatam is presented in a very simple fashion. So when asked how he was inspired to do it, he said that I was praying to the Lord to give me some inspiration on how to present this Bhagavatam nicely. And the Supreme Lord's associate, Swarup Damodar Goswami, appeared to me. And Swarup Damodar Goswami appeared to me and explained to me exactly what are the things I should be mentioning. And by the inspiration of Swarup Damodar Goswami, I could make this presentation. So we can imagine that he was definitely not an ordinary personality. And then 1908, another interesting incident took place. One of his bosses during his British Raj was Sir William Duke, who was the collector at Calcutta. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was in Calcutta visiting from Navdeep for some purpose, Sir William Duke visited him and invited him to come to the writer's building. That was supposed to be one of the headquarters of the Britishers. So when he entered, Sir William Duke folded his hands and said that I want to beg apologies from you for all the offenses I may have committed in my life so far. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was shocked because this was like a British lord. And he said, why are you doing this? He said, when you were at the peak of your career as district magistrate, all of us from the British Raj were seeing your intellect, your efficiency and your power. And all of us were getting scared that if India starts producing few more Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then we would have to pack up our bags and go. And therefore, behind your backs, I tried several times to cut your power down to size and play some kinds of politics. But you were so powerful that in spite of all my attempts, there was no dent in your career at all. But there is a culture in our society, he was saying, that before we die, we beg forgiveness from all those whom we have committed some offense, and so I have come here. And I am leaving for England very soon. I don't know whether I will see you again. I thought, you are a man of God, you are a great soul, I should beg forgiveness from you. So in this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he attracted the attention not only of devotees, but also people who had practically nothing to do with devotional service, but simply by the power of his character. And in 1910, when he had practically retired and gone to Jagannath Puri, and he had set up his own bhajan kutir called Swananda Sukhada Kunj, and this was the place where he was doing his bhajan near Haridas Thakur Samadhi. And whenever Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj would visit Jagannath Puri, Bhaktivinoda Thakur would visit him and fall at his feet and beg him, please instruct me, please give me guidance. And Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj would feel very embarrassed because he considered Bhaktivinoda Thakur to be much more advanced and elevated. So once when Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj visited Puri, Bhaktivinoda Thakur came to know that he has come to Puri. So he started searching for Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. But Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj went and took shelter in the house of a prostitute. And people were searching for him all around, and they couldn't find him anywhere. And finally, he was found sitting outside a prostitute's home and laughing, that today I have outwitted Kedarnath Babu. He was always catching my feet and begging from me to speak katha, but he is more elevated. Today I will go and hear from him from a distance. He has not been able to catch me. So this kind of respect he evoked even from people of the caliber of Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. And finally, 1914, June 23rd, on Gadadhar Pandit disappearance day, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur disappeared from this mortal world, and Srila Prabhupada called him the spiritual master of spiritual master of my spiritual master. He is the grand man spiritual master. And thus, we can see from his schedule, no description of Bhaktivinoda Thakur can be complete without a run through of his fantastic schedule. You know, yesterday we just had a late night and I'm still thinking that I missed out on sleep, I couldn't do my japa. And when I see this schedule of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it is mind-boggling. 8 to 10 p.m. he would rest at night. And then 10 p.m. to 4 a.m., which is our peak period, you know, he would write books. And 4 to 4:30 in the morning, again he would take rest. 4:30 in the morning he would bathe and chant his rounds until 7 o'clock. And then 7 o'clock he would start answering correspondence. 7:30, he would read certain religious and philosophical works for 1 hour till 8:30 and meet some guests and visitors at 8:30. Because he was a district magistrate and collector, so many people would come with their problems, with their difficulties. But he would patiently meet all of them. At 9:30, he would walk on the veranda. You know, after meeting so many people, his mind was still so tranquil, he could contemplate on various philosophical thoughts from 9:30. And for around 15 minutes, then he would take rest, take a bath and breakfast, which would consist of a half quart of milk and two chapatis and some fruit. At 9:55, he would wear his uniform, sit in his carriage and wear his coat and pants. He would have 6 large strands of tulsi. So he didn't care what the Britishers thought or what the others thought. He would have big 6 strands of tulsi on his neck, and he would shave once a month, full shave, head shave also. And at 10 a.m. he would be bang on dot. He would carry a pocket watch with him and he would always be on schedule. So 10 to 1 o'clock he would be in his coat. And generally, what the others would take 1.5 hours to come to a decision, he would take decision in 5 minutes. And he would take 2 minutes to write the judgment. So in 7 minutes, one case taken care. That was his level of efficiency. So many were envious of him because of that, but they couldn't do anything to him. At 1 p.m. he would come home refreshed and then return from 2 to 5. Again from 5 to 7 he would spend in translating Sanskrit and Bengali literatures, and he would dictate to a secretary. He would have a bath, take a meal. Again his dinner would consist of little rice, chapati and some milk. And then after that at 8 o'clock again he would take rest. Like this, year after year he would spend producing volumes of literature and such books. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that without Krishna's inspiration and intervention, this is not possible. This is directly Krishna's hand. No ordinary person can even imagine doing this. So on this most auspicious appearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we pray at his divine lotus feet that by his mercy we can also get a drop of dedication and sincerity, an empowerment in preaching and spreading the glories of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because factually on this path of bhakti, our own efforts give very limited results. Our own efforts should only be directed to attract the mercy of the Lord and His devotees. And when such great souls, who on their appearance day become very merciful, and they give, release their mercy in great quantities. So if we pray to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur on this day, we will also be recipients of His mercy, and by His mercy, although filled with all kinds of faults, although not qualified, but still we can pray to be insignificant instruments in the hands of His dedicated servants like Srila Prabhupada and His representatives, so that we can also purify ourselves and perfect our lives. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki! Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ayurbhav Mahotsav ki! Srila Prabhupada ki! Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande! So, any comments, Srinathji Prabhu, on Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Srila Prabhupada ki! Gaur Premanande!